Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Good afternoon, Anton. How are you?
I'm very good, Dave. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. What have you got for us this week?
This week it's all about rain, shine, pain and hemp.
Rain, shine, pain, and thank God it's not the usual nonsense you have. Okay, so go for it. Pick one of those.
Having spent a career around electronics and broadcasting, you will be able to tell us what's the common theme through rain, shine, pain, and hemp.
I have absolutely no idea.
They are all things that interrupt electrical signals.
Hemp interrupts a radio signal, does it?
Hemp interrupts electrical signals. Hemp is a high-altitude electromagnetic pulse. Pain is a persistent electrical impulse noise. Rain is a repetitive electrical impulse noise. And shine is a single isolated input noise. And there is no need for you to know what any of these things are unless you live in the tiny Welsh village of Aberhosen.
Hold on a second. Shine. Where's the E in shine if you're talking here about something? Why is it called? Why is it not called shin?
I believe you're allowed to graft on additional letters to make an acronym sound good.
Why bother making the acronym sound like shine when the word shin is a perfectly good word? Go on. Sorry, what are we talking about, a Welsh village here?
Well, tiny Welsh village of Aberhosen. Mm-hmm. For 18 months at precisely 7 o'clock every morning, the broadband in this village would disappear.
So you got down. The Twilight Zone.
Exactly. So they did what you would do, which is they shouted at British Telecom, and BT said, well, we don't know. It's not immediately evident as to what it is. So they went hunting around. It took them 18 months of hunting around, and they discovered that it was being caused by a shine.
By a shin.
By
a single high-level impulse noise.
Correct. Exactly. That's the very fella. Which was created by a pensioner's second-hand telly.
I thought you were going to say an alarm went off every morning at 7 o'clock. Wait a minute. So, like, are you going to tell me he turned his television on every morning at 7 o'clock?
That is exactly it. And really? His television was so old and obviously had such dodgy capacitors within it that when it fired up, it gave out an impulse significant enough to literally take out the entire village's broadband. And he just happened to be in the routine, or she, it doesn't specify, of turning on the television at 7 o'clock in the morning, maybe to get the news, who knows, which immediately shut down the broadband in the village. And apparently, this is not the only time it has happened. If you go on to BT's website, there is an entire page dedicated to how to deal with pains, rains and shines. And one of the things it says to do is take an AM radio. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You were 18 and I was just an AM jock. Well, back in the day, you could take an AM radio, tune it in to 627 kilohertz and walk it around the house. And it'll do the buzz thing when it gets close to anything that's putting out broadband frequency electromagnetic interference. So if you think, I think I have something in my house that's interfering with my broadband, tune an AM radio to 627 kilohertz and walk around and you'll hear it make, it'll do that buzzy hiss thing that old radios used to do.
I'm more fascinated by the fact that it was 7 o'clock every morning and that's when somebody turned on their TV. Just, it was always 7 o'clock, was it?
It was like clockwork, so much so that when BT sent the engineers there, they knew that it was happening at exactly that time. So they walked around the village every morning from 6 a.m. through to 8 a.m. with detection equipment. I assume they have something more fancy than an AM radio and were able to locate both the time and say, okay, it's every time at 7, and then narrow down on the house and eventually knock on the door in the house and say, listen, what do you do at 7 o'clock in the morning? Pensioner says, well, I put on the news. Bing, there's your answer. You're taking out the entire village's broadband.
And how do they resolve this? Did they buy him a telly to keep him happy?
Well, that's the bit that I'm not clear on. They asked that the telly be thrown out, but none of the reporting says, and the villagers in an act of altruism clubbed together and got him a flat screen, or BT shelled out for one. Maybe they did, but history doesn't record.
Wow, that's kind of a weird story and almost a lovely story.
Almost. Yeah. Do you want one that is neither? Well, it's actually weird, but it's not lovely.
Go on, yeah.
A man has kept Richard Nixon's half-eaten sandwich for 60 years.
Where? I mean, like, where did he keep the sandwich? In a something that cryogenically frozen or something, no?
He kept it in a pickle jar. He visited a place called Wyman Park in Illinois for a cookout back in September 22nd, 1960, when he wasn't even president, he was vice president. At this cookout, he was given a barbecue buffalo sandwich on a paper plate. He took a number of bites and commented on how tasty it was before giving the uneaten part back.
And which commented suggest, on how tasty yeah, it was. There's no record of this, though, is there?
Yeah. It might have been the first time that Nixon told a lie, because he left the half-eaten sandwich there. The half-eaten sandwich was collected by this man who was then a boy, Steve Jen, from the town of Sullivan, Illinois, who was 14-year-old and in the Boy Scouts at the time. And he took it, wrapped it, and it was put in a pickle jar.
Was he doing some work there at the time or just hanging around?
He was part of a Boy Scout. That's when you plug a boy into your TV. A Boy Scout honor guard. To recognise the arrival of the future president.
He was part of the honour guard. Okay, so 60 years later, we still got the sandwich.
In the freezer.
Fantastic. But I mean, like, can it be verified? Can we check with teeth marks and stuff?
We can verify it back until 1988, at which point he was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, the world's oldest TV show.
With the sandwich.
With the sandwich! When it was in the first flush of youth, only 28 years
Fantastic.
Of age. So it has now had a significant birthday and has it's almost at the bus pass, so we thought we should recognise it.
We did a bit of that at a stage. Neil Young was in here one night and he had a can of something, which we never opened actually, but he did touch it. He just moved it aside. And also R.E.M., at their first album, I remember we kept a biscuit. In fact, I even have a photograph of R.E.M. in here and the packet of biscuits is in it. But we then gave up. We should have kept it.
I need to get to the bottom of the story. You had a can that Neil Young touched but didn't drink out of, but then you got bored and gave it away. Is that it?
No, he left it here. So we brought it upstairs and said, let's try and keep something of everybody. It was kind of an idea we had for the lasted about a week.
But what did you do with Neil Young's can? You could at least have kept it.
Well, we kept it upstairs in the desk for about a year, and then I'm sure somebody came along and said, what's this old can doing here? It's in a bin
what
somewhere.
A criminal now. Waste. And R.E.M.'s biscuit?
But the biscuit thing is weird because I've noticed in a photograph recently that the biscuit thing is there. Like the actual biscuit. It was a packet of wafers of some sort. I don't know what they were. You know, and Michael Stipe had a bite out of one of them. Anyway, go on.
Have you ever seen the documentary on Neil Young? I think it was Harvest when he discusses how they made it, and he has one set of speakers in his bar.
And now, hold on a second. Whoa. You have to read the. You have to read the book. I mean, there's a brilliant biography of Neil Young. It's called Shaky, I think. And like, he's got one huge set of speakers on a barge out on a river. He's got another set of speakers on top of his barn, and he's got some speakers underneath the floorboards of his kitchen or something. He says, "Right, we're ready to record." Brilliant.
And then he put a mic sort of equidistant, and he would balance it by saying, "More barn." That's what I heard. What a hero.
And do you know what he's got in the barn? He's an amazing thing. Himself and Rod Stewart are two of the biggest.
Trains,
that's right, yeah, trains. Yeah.
I didn't know Neil Young. I actually talked to Rod Stewart many years ago about his train collection, and I thought it was the kind of thing where, you know, he'd say, "I'm a bit embarrassed." My God, he was like a pig in muck. He was happy as a clam.
Yeah, because I said to him, "Would you rather be on the cover of Railway Model Monthly or Rolling Stone?" He said, "Railway Model Monthly, man, any day." Go on.
Do you want to stay on electrical matters, given that we're talking about wiring?
I really don't care.
I think we need some form of cancelling, Dave, to get our spark back. Magawa, the landmine detection rat, has been given a gold medal for bravery.
He's a landmine detection rat. What, they send him out into landy-mindy places and he might blow up but might not?
I think because he's a rat, he's sufficiently light on his feet that he won't set off any landmines, but he will smell them.
And he's been given an award. He doesn't really know what the consequences might be.
That's what you think, Dave. He's been given a gold medal for life-saving bravery and devotion to duty. Now, you cannot be brave without a good comprehension of the risks that you are running. So clearly, Magawa, the African pouched rat, knows exactly what he's at. He has been working for several years now. He's discovered 39 landmines and 28 items of unexploded ordnance.
And what happens? He kind of smells them and sniffs them and does something, and then people know, oh, there's one there. He doesn't step on them because he's too small to maybe make them go off. Is that it?
That's exactly it. He can sort of float across the top of the mine, sniffs them, and I don't know how they make a rat signal that he's found a mine, but he does it. And apparently, he's not alone. A lot of rats are very good for this because they sniff, particularly for gunpowder, they sniff almost as well, if not bigger, better than dogs. And they can clear in a day the kind of area that it would take a human damn nearly a week. with a metal detector.
Well, good man, Magawa, whatever his name is.
Did you know?
No.
That he is by far not the first animal to receive awards for bravery. There is an award in the UK for animals who have shown great courage in the line of duty.
Right, I'm sure a lot of dogs and what, horses?
Pigeons.
Pigeons. Oh, right, sorry, I should have known.
Pigeons do very well, particularly in the First World War, where they were the broadband of their day. But you're right.
I'll never forget Ginny McGee. I think I thought I told this before, but I have to say it again. It was so good. You know, like you're waiting for the World Cup to start, but there's an hour of Brazilian salsa because you have to show off the culture beforehand, and the whole world is watching, and he was bored out of his mind going, here come the dancers. And they let off all these doves, and there they go, the pigeons of peace.
Well, apart from pigeons, you are right. The main animal that has done very well is the German Shepherd. Ironic, why, Dave?
Because, is he the guy who brings the whiskey to you when you're caught up a mountain?
No, that's the St. Bernard.
Oh, St. Bernard, right.
I think it's brandy, but you may be cheap. Right. Why is it ironic that the Brits give awards to German Shepherds?
Because they're German. I don't know why.
Because they renamed them. They were sufficiently jingoistic. You know the Alsatian? The only reason we ever called Alsatians or called German Shepherds Alsatians was because of anti-German sentiment following the First World War.
Do you remember Dermot Morgan song, Alsatian once again?
Well, one of the main ones to have won one of these awards was an Alsatian called Bing, who parachuted into Normandy in 1944 with the parachute regiment of the British Army and subsequently went on to defend British soldiers and sniff out Germans all the way across northern France. What I think is interesting about Bing is they did two things to him. First of all, they gave him a medal. Secondly, they stuffed him and put him on display.
Really?
I would have thought if you've gotten a medal for bravery, it should preclude any chance of somebody posthumously stuffing you.
There is. Yeah, it is kind of weird. All right. OK, you have me there. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
While we're on animal related topics.
Yep.
America is facing a time bomb explosion of millions of super pigs.
Have we had super pigs on this program before?
I'm sure we have, Dave. Yeah, you can never have too many super pigs.
Right.
Can you remember the movie that had Norm from Cheers in it that was filmed in Dublin? And was it Space Truckers? Didn't it have giant square pigs at the end of it?
Space Truckers. I spent a day on the set of Space Truckers.
Oh, God help you.
What do you call that actor, that sort of very grand guy who's been in the papers only in the last few weeks looking fantastic at the age of 75? Because he's got
John Hurt.
No. I can't remember.
Feel Good.
No, he's a very kind of Shakespearean kind of, like, do I really have to talk?
Patrick Stewart.
No, that type. Jesus. Anyway, he's the guy who died on the Jacks in Game of Thrones. Whatever his name is, anyway, we interviewed. It took him 2 hours a day to get his makeup on down there, and we were interviewing him while he was getting his makeup on. Charles Dance, that's who it is.
I've got a long makeup.
He's very famous.
You know Sam Neill?
Sam Neill, I do. Who is, by the way, is from Northern Ireland and not from Australia.
Exactly, Sam Neill. When he was in Event Horizon, a much underrated sci-fi horror. Do you know what he watched during his 6 hours of makeup to keep himself entertained?
It really is a bit of a horror, that movie, all right. Yeah, scary stuff. No, I don't.
Father Ted.
Really? I don't know.
Dr. Jack. Where this linked was, wasn't there square pigs at the end of Space Truckers? Dr. Jack Mayer, a zoologist who has been researching wild pigs for 40 years, has warned that the population in the southern United States could keep growing unless there is a sudden swine flu pandemic. So, fingers crossed for a pandemic. He says it's a crazy situation in what I call the pig bomb, which has exploded in North America. And he goes on to say there's not another animal that can put little feet on the ground quicker than a wild pig. They breed twice a year, and they only need to be 3 months old to start doing it.
Really? Do they have horns and things, don't they?
They do. They grow tusks.
Go on.
The Royal Canadian Mounted Police are investigating a man reportedly hiking nude on a trail in Summerland.
Yeah? Where's that?
Yeah, it's in Canada.
Right.
What's significant about this isn't the fact that somebody is hiking nude, because I'm sure that happens all the time. Although I would say it's not advisable. It's like frying bacon. It's one of those things that you want to have pants on for when you're doing it. But what's ironic about this is the name of the trail that he was hiking nude on.
It's called?
The Full Frontal Trail.
The Full Frontal Trail. I mean, the poor guy is out in the wild going for a hike and he's not wearing clothes. Leave him alone.
minding his own.
I mean,
own
the North American
business.
Continent is burning, and you're worried about some guy going around with a nip with a thing on his back. Probably has he got a
think
backpack?
Of the nettles, Dave. Think of the nettles.
That's his problem. It's not anybody else's. Leave the guy alone. He's hitching in the nip. So I remember there was a guy whose name I can't remember, but it was something like Sir Arthur Folks or something. Or well, actually, no, he was the guy from the Bahamas. Do you remember? Because I always remember that he was the guy in the Bahamas just a few years ago. Because you know the president? No, not the president. Maybe it's the Prime Minister of the Bahamas.
Can I make a coffee while you're doing this?
His name is Lyndon Pindling, which I thought that beats any of your names. Seriously, he is currently probably the Prime Minister of the Bahamas. Anyway, the point about it is there was somebody called Sir Something Folks, and this is important because, like, he used to go around nude, and he used to, what do you call it, hitch all the time and go and climb up mountains, and he's gone up the K9 and all this kind of stuff, and he used to do it with no clothes on. This is completely true. And it's like the picture of him in the paper, it was fantastic, with a big backpack on him and nude. And it just says underneath, like, Sir Arthur Folks, and then it has a semicolon, and then it says, off to Antarctica. So if we get rid of this, you know, Sir Arthur Folks off to Antarctica, it's brilliant. Sorry.
Rarely is a tangent both
Sorry.
So long
yeah, I don't
and
know.
So circuitous.
Like, you know, if you're going to be out in the wilds of Canada and you want to go off in the nip and do a bit
and
of,
if you know, want to whip it out to entertain yourself and the bears, you should be left.
I didn't say that.
You're dead right. That was the thrust of your argument. In final and most important news,
yes.
Dave, I have a health warning.
A health warning, yep.
A health warning. It is a public health warning. Once again, you deliver on the public service remit of your parent organisation. If you are thinking of living on a bag of licorice a day, do not. It can be fatal.
Licorice can be fatal. Why is that?
A construction worker in the US state of Massachusetts, in case you didn't know where Massachusetts was, has been killed by his licorice habit, according to the BBC. He is unnamed, but he has shown up in the New England Journal of Medicine. And its studies revealed that he died of cardiac arrest because he had a buildup of glycyrrhizic acid, which is the active ingredient in licorice, which caused hypertension, hypokalemia, metabolic alkalosis, and fatal arrhythmias, as well as renal failure.
What? I can tell you what. Do you know, we had a thing about Jeffrey last week. Do you remember Jeffrey, the town of Jeffrey?
And I told yes, you about, I do. It's been renamed from asbestos.
Yeah, I told you about Jeffrey Hammond from Jethro Tull.
Indeed.
With the double barrel surname. Well, there's a woman called Licorice who's a singer. Yeah. She was in one that incredible band called the Incredible String Band, and Licorice McKechnie or something. There were two women sometimes on some of the albums, and one of them became a mayor in Wales. But Licorice has gone missing about 30 years ago, and she's never been found.
Licorice has gone missing?
Nobody knows where she is, yeah. And do you know what amazing thing about the Incredible String Band? The Archbishop of Canterbury was on Desert Island Discs, and he picked an Incredible String Band song.
Can you think of any other instances from music of fatal food issues?
Fatal food issues. Jimi Hendrix, he died in his own vomit. No, not that. No.
Oh, Dave! No, you had to go. Please, you couldn't have gone to Mama Cass and the sandwich just to wrap us up. You had to go.
Did
for
Mama
the Cass? Rock and roll.
Did Mama Cass die in a sandwich?
Yeah, Mama Cass died of a ham sandwich.
All right. No, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
This is why you have to be careful. No matter how much you think I should live on a daily consumption of 1.5 bags of black licorice a day, don't.
Yeah, that's
fatal arrhythmias,
definitely
Dave.
Not good. All right, well, I think what you should do is listen to a dissertation on life, love, and an amoeba, which is a very cellular song by the Incredible String Band, because I think you might come back next week and discuss it. It's
my evening planned, Dave.
Good man. Yeah, absolutely. Listen, get out. Anton, thank you very much indeed. We'll see you again next Sunday.
See you, Dave.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.